Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going, run a wild hog holding. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this joke course. But it's no host bar, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is good, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep. We are live here on YouTube for what typically doesn't happen often of me going live. We are here and we are going to break down Dynasty from a casual perspective, right? Now, as someone who is sort of a casual watcher of AEW and the product that it has, watches from the sidelines, has a little bit of knowledge of the product. That's going to be the major focus of this episode. Dynasty is later tonight, by the way. I am going to sit through what probably will be 5 hours of wrestling solely because I'm interested in some of the matches. I want to see how this gets pulled off. So with that being said, let's dive in. But before we get to Dynasty, there are some things that I want to talk about that happened on SmackDown on Friday night that I want to break down and talk about with you guys. We're gonna talk about those things first. As always, go to the description of the video, and eventually when this gets on audio, go to the description, the show notes, look at the affiliate links we have with WWE Shop and Expedia, and help out the podcast by using those links. But let's dive in. So the first thing that I want to talk about, is Kevin Owens. This is probably the easiest thing to talk about. So let's just go ahead and talk about Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens came out on Friday, announced that he requires neck surgery. He's going to miss WrestleMania and therefore Randy Orton therefore no longer has an opponent for WrestleMania. From what I've heard, as he said, you know, this injury happened sometime back in January, which would have probably been the Royal Rumble match with Cody. My thing with Kevin Owens is when you have the style of wrestling that Kevin Owens has, eventually you're going to break down. Kevin Owens, one of the greatest on the mic, in my opinion, one of the greatest in-ring performers, in my opinion. If we're judging all-around professional wrestler, part of me wants to fully go into Kevin Owens is the greatest on the planet right now. I know some will find that to be absolutely absurd, but I do think at the very least, Kevin Owens is top three active pro wrestler from an overall, from a on the mic, in the ring, character work. He could be funny. He could be serious. He could be a baby face. He could be a heel. I think Kevin Owens, right? So this neck injury sucks, but it's not surprising given the type of style that Kevin Owens runs with, right? He goes all out 365 days a year, and eventually this is going to happen. Now, if his last match of his career, I don't know if this is career ending, but anytime you have surgery on the neck, it is one of those things where we may never see Kevin Owens again. And so I just, for me, for him to, and if the last match we saw was at Elimination Chamber against Sami Zayn in Toronto, Canada, I can't think of a better way for Kevin Owens to go out. Just personally. Doing a hardcore style match, his hit, right? I couldn't think of a better way for Kevin Owens to go out. Now, obviously, I want Kevin Owens back. I think WWE will lose will lose the heart of SmackDown if they lose Kevin Owens due to injury, right? But I also want to shoot down some rumors here, right? Because we know there's going to be those AEW dorks who are, oh, well, Kevin Owens is having surgery, but Kevin Steen, he doesn't have to. And Kevin Steen's coming to AEW. Shut up. Let's just go ahead and dispel all of that before it happens. Kevin Owens is hurt. He's going to have surgery. If he does come back to wrestling, he'll come back to WWE. Right? Let's just go ahead and shut down any rumors that this isn't a legitimate thing. So where does that leave Randy Orton? Is the question I think everyone's asking. I think it's pretty obvious Orton's going to do a open challenge of some sort, or Nick Aldis. You know, Nick Aldis just got RKO'd, so maybe Nick Aldis comes in and says, hey, Randy, I have an opponent. See you in Vegas. And then we get this mystery opponent for Orton in Vegas. And that ends up being, I think it could be one of two people. I think it's going to be either Rusev, or I think it's going to be Aleister Black. I think someone is returning, excuse me, and will face Randy Orton at WrestleMania. I think stylistically, I would prefer it to be Rusev. I think that works better for Randy Orton. Aleister Black, I think just, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of either of them coming back, returning. I don't know if necessarily WWE needs any of those two wrestlers, especially at a moment like WrestleMania. I do think it would be better to bring them back on the Monday after Mania. But Orton, I think the best match, if it was like We Too Deep booking this thing, if it was We Too Deep booking this, it would be Nick Aldis versus Randy Orton. Nick Aldis, I'm sure, could still go. I'm sure he's still in ring shape. I'm sure Nick Aldis is at the Performance Center in the ring all the time. Like I don't know about you, but this is like one of those things where, like, if I was a WWE wrestler and I had access to the Performance Center, or if I was like a WWE employee that had access to the Performance Center, I would be there anytime I got the opportunity to be there, because you have a place where you could work. If I'm like someone like a Nick Aldis, where I can go and help the future generations get better while still, you know, doing my own like workout and stuff like that. Like I think in that meant like having a Performance Center, you know, at the least it's a free gym that you could go to, that you have the benefit of working for a company that will provide that for you. So I'm sure Nick Aldis is still in some sort of ring shape. It's not like you don't go from being Nick Aldis, one of the greatest on the indies, to not being able to wrestle. Like, that's just not going to happen. So I would want Nick Aldis versus Randy Orton, but I do think realistically it will be it'll be either Rusev or it'll be Aleister Black, and I'm leaning more towards Aleister Black returning at WrestleMania, which again I'm not the biggest fan of, if I'm being honest. And so we move on. We move on to the next big topic here. And I want to spend a little bit of time here before we go into Dynasty discussing this issue. Did Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair cross the line on Friday? For those who don't know, or maybe don't, you know, let's just sort of recap it. A few weeks ago, there was a sit-down interview, Charlotte and Tiffany, where Charlotte sort of just goes off script, starts, you know, going into business for herself, and really just buried Tiffany Stratton, made her look awful, right? Just, you know, and Tiffany, not really able to handle that situation, sticks to the script, so now it makes her look a little bit crazy, right? So, this past Friday, we have another promo. They're in the ring. They're hyping this thing up. Now, I'm going to be honest. I was not watching this live. I haven't watched SmackDown live in probably a month. I'm just going to be honest. With the UK tour, I'm not a big fan of all of that. And so, I've been sort of following SmackDown, especially because SmackDown, over the last 2 to 3 months, has been the worst show in wrestling, at least for the year 2025, right? And so I typically have no reason to watch SmackDown. I typically just go in and watch clips on YouTube. So I haven't seen the full segment. WWE's doing a lot to edit some of the personal stuff that gets thrown around in this segment, but I know enough of the situation to comment on it, and I do have opinions. I think what we saw on Friday did cross the line. I think both of them crossed the line, though. I think this entire build has crossed the line into there's certain things that are just like no-nos in being a professional, right? So again, this is me being consistent. I call out AEW wrestlers and Tony Khan and all of them for being unprofessional in the ring and in promos. And one of the things I like about how WWE typically does promos is that it's not the battle rap style promo. It is, we're going to promote the story where we want to tell, and a promo is supposed to actually have a purpose. Whereas if you watch AEW, a lot of times their promos are just, because they're not scripted, because there's no plan, there's no story, there's no here's where we want to get to, it tends to feel like a rap battle where the first person starts talking, the next person responds, then there's a response to that, and it's who can have the best, you know, who can burn, who can own the other the best, right? And that's what this promo reminded me of. This reminded me of an AEW style, like rap battle-esque type promo. Every now and then those promos work. This did not work. Now, I believe that this ultimately comes down to poor booking from WWE's perspective and how they originally cast the characters for this storyline. I've said this before. Charlotte should have come back as the old-time veteran who's being put to the shelf, who's been gone for almost 2 years, who's trying to get her way back up the mountain, but she looks at the mountain and she sees all this younger talent in front of her. She see, right, and the and she sees Tiffany Stratton with the ultimate prize. And so she comes in, and what I would have done is have her come into the Rumble. She would have won the Rumble, absolutely. Right, have her win the Rumble, have her come in to do some SmackDowns. You know, you have this situation where, like, Roxanne Perez, which I mentioned on Friday night, they haven't really built anything with Roxanne, right? You give her this record for longest run in the Women's Royal Rumble, but then do absolutely nothing to follow up with that with Roxanne Perez, right? Imagine, like, having some sort of story, even if it was just like a month-long little feud where Charlotte comes in and Roxanne comes in and says, Charlotte, I could have beaten you. Look at me, right? Look, Charlotte, you don't belong here no more. Have, like, matches on the way up to Mania where it's like Charlotte has to beat Roxanne. Charlotte has to beat a Chelsea Green or a Piper Niven or you know, one of these younger superstars that have risen up the ranks while Charlotte was gone, because Charlotte needs to earn her place back at the top of the mountain, and she needs to prove to herself, right, and make her this the sympathetic babyface who is coming back and has to work hard, right? That's where Charlotte should have been. But instead, she immediately comes in as this arrogant, cocky heel that no one in the fan base, no one in the stadium, no one watching the show on TV, no one relates to that. So it immediately gets booed, right? But Charlotte's already at a disadvantage. So this is where I want to set the scene before I talk about what actually happened on Friday, right? Charlotte's already at a disadvantage, because so many wrestling fans immediately boo her because her last name is Flair. I think that's completely unfair, by the way. Did Charlotte Flair, did she get a little bit of an upper hand, a little bit did she get a handout to get into the WWE? Sure. Absolutely. But so did Randy Orton. So did Cody Rhodes. So did, you know, find any second or third generation, Roman Reigns, the Usos, right? How even like The Rock sort of got a little bit of like, if you had a gimmick fail the way Rocky Maivia failed, you typically don't get a second chance in the wrestling business or in WWE, but The Rock did because he had connections to the business, right? And so I think there is a little bit of an upper hand for her to get a tryout and to get into the business. But once she gets to NXT, it stops becoming, well, she's here because of Ric Flair. Once she starts to prove to everyone that she has the athletic ability and the ability to be in the ring, she's earned everything that's been given to her. Now, did she get an upper hand over some of these women wrestlers who've been putting in time on the indies? And did Charlotte not have to do that? Sure. I understand that argument. But to immediately say that everything has been given to Charlotte Flair because she's Charlotte Flair and her dad's Ric Flair, I'm going to have to disagree with that. Is there a little bit of protection? I think Vince McMahon ran WWE, I think she was a little bit protected. I think Charlotte Flair knew she could go around, and because Ric Flair was a friend with Vince, then I think she understood she could bend the rules in certain ways. But she still had to work her ass off. Like, this is a woman who didn't want to be in wrestling. She solely did it because her brother Reed died. She got into the business as a memorial to her brother Reed, and she didn't want to be here, right? But then she did it, and she became good at it. Now, I'm questioning whether or not she's the best in the Four Horsewomen. That question is, you know, I've talked about that a few times over the last year or so. I do think Bayley, in my opinion, has surpassed her as the best of the Four Horsewomen. I would even venture to put Charlotte in third place with Bailey, Becky, then Charlotte. I can't put Sasha Banks above because Sasha Banks is no different than Charlotte, right? So many of the, especially these AEW dorks, these IWC dorks, they want to put Charlotte Flair last place and put Sasha in first as if Sasha isn't the same way. She thinks she's better than she is, right? She throws temper tantrums. She goes off script. She doesn't perform. She no-shows events in WWE, doesn't show up, you know, or when she does show up, she throws the belt off and then runs off. Of, you know, she threw a temper tantrum, right? And so Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks, whatever you want to name her, she's nowhere near as successful as the other three, and she's nowhere near as influential in the business as the other three. So if I had to do a ranking today, it would be Bailey, Becky, Charlotte, Sasha, right? As far as the original four horsewomen. And that's off of, again, that's always prone to change with more information, right? I don't think it's fair for Charlotte to immediately get booed because of her last name. I don't think that's fair. I don't, right? She still had to earn her place on the roster, right? Like, a lot of people are going to say the same thing in a few weeks at the NFL draft when Shedeur Sanders gets drafted first over, or probably first overall, if we're going to be honest, right? Or second, or somewhere within the top probably 20 picks, Shedeur Sanders will be drafted, right? And a lot of hater fans will say, well, he only got that type of ranking because of his because Deion is his dad. Well, no, Shedeur Sanders still had to put in work to get to where he is. Did he get a little bit of an upper hand having his dad as his coach? Sure. Did he get an upper hand getting into a Division I FBS program like Colorado? Even though it's a lower tier team, there's a lot of people in the country who have to work a little bit harder than Shedeur did to get to a Division I program. Sure, understand that. He was blessed with Deion Sanders as a dad. But that doesn't necessarily, that being Deion Sanders' son doesn't mean you're going to be a good athlete. He still had to work. He still had to grind. He still had to go to practice, right? Same thing with Charlotte Flair, right? Same thing with Roman Reigns. Same thing with the Usos, right? And this nepotism stuff is kind of annoying, right? Cody Rhodes had to work to get to where he's at. He's not WWE champion today solely because of Dusty. He had to work and grind and go reinvent himself and go start a whole new company to come back to get to the level he's at right now, right? So let's talk about what actually happened Friday then, right? So Tiffany Stratton tries to get a receipt by going completely off script and calling out Charlotte's personal life and her divorces, right? So the question then is, did this cross the line? And I would say, for two reasons, yes, this crossed a line. A line was crossed on Friday. I lost a lot of respect for Tiffany Stratton on Friday. I did. Here's why. Two reasons. These are logical reasons that I don't think a lot of wrestling fans consider when they look at this situation. What I see a lot of within the IWC, the casuals, the hardcores, the sickos, everyone on the internet that talks about this in some way, shape, or form, on whether it's X, Discord, Facebook, a lot of people are immediately going to side with Tiffany because it's Tiffany Stratton. And she's going against someone that the majority of the fan base does not like. So I think it's unfair by itself, right? And so from someone who I'm of the mindset that both are in the wrong, no one's right in this situation. But when it comes to Friday, Tiffany Stratton crossed the line. And I think we have to call this that. We can't protect Tiffany from this, right? There's a whole lot of things being thrown around about, well, Charlotte was the first aggressor And sure, Charlotte should have been reprimanded. And it sounds like there's a lot of heat on Charlotte for the sit-down interview. But Tiffany has to be professional enough. Remember, these are professional wrestlers, right? You have to be professional enough in your workplace to understand that the first aggressor isn't the one that gets punished. It's always the person who throws the second punch, right? We see this in football. We see this in basketball. We see this in practically any sport. But we also see this in life, right? But like in football, right? If I'm a wide receiver and I'm hand fighting with the cornerback going down the field, right? And I don't like the way he's holding on to me, right? And so I throw a little jab into his face mask, right? And he responds and he throws a jab back, right? He's the one that's going to get penalized because that's the one that got, right? It's the retaliation that gets penalized. So I'm not one of these people that are like, oh, well, Charlotte went after Tiffany's money. Tiffany has the right to respond. I'm the type of person that'll say, look, Charlotte went after your money. Go outwork her, prove her wrong, and let her be the bully, right? Because here's what bullies want. Bullies want attention. And a lot of times bullies are bullies because they lack a self-confidence. There's the cliche trope, hurt people, right? Charlotte's going through a lot in her personal life. Who knows what the reasoning for why she went off script, but let her be the unprofessional one. You don't have to stoop to that level. And that's what Tiffany Stratton did, trying to get back at Charlotte. And it crossed the line for two reasons. The first, Charlotte Flair, the character, was not married. So from a storyline perspective, the line makes absolutely no sense. Now, obviously, we know as fans that Charlotte Flair has been married and divorced 3 times, right? But in the WWE universe, in the world known as WWE, where there's characters being played by actors, the characters are supposed to progress a story, right? Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte Flair's job should have been to go out there in the ring, work together to build a story to promote their match in 2 weeks, two and a half weeks. That should have been the goal. Instead, what we got, though, were two people who went into business for themselves and have been this entire feud. And you see what the result of that is, that now it's getting personal and it's not benefiting the story. It would be one thing if the character Charlotte Flair was married and divorced on screen in the storyline, but it hasn't happened. Now what you're doing is you're breaking the fourth wall. You're bringing real life into entertainment. And sure, a lot of the fan base knows about it, but I don't think these lines are blurred. And if they are, they shouldn't be. I've said this with Hulk Hogan. I've said this with Tessa Blanchard. I've said this with a lot of other controversial characters, right? Whatever their personal beliefs, whatever happens in their personal life, all of these things, right? Let's use AJ Styles as a example. AJ Styles, a few years ago, may have been even before his WWE tenure, I don't exactly know when the comments were said, came out against the LGBT community and some sort of statement, right? That should not be brought up in a storyline, though, because that was Alan Jones, not AJ Styles, right? You see what I'm saying? What Hulk Hogan says off TV, what Terry Bollea says off TV in his personal life, it may be shitty, and you can call Terry Bollea a shitty person, but Hulk Hogan, the character, is not the same as Terry Bollea, the actor playing the character, right? It would be like, and this is the example I tried to explain in a Discord the other day, it would be like if I'm filming a movie, if I'm a producer and I'm filming a movie, and I have two female leads in this movie, and casted in those roles are Jennifer Aniston and Sydney Sweeney, right? And I cast both of those to play these roles, and something happened off camera where there's beef between the two actors. If Jennifer Aniston came on set, I said, action, we're filming the movie, and she ad-libbed the line that doesn't add to the story. Ad-libs are fine if they add to and make sense within the narrative being told. But if Jennifer Aniston came on screen and ad-libbed against Sydney Sweeney something personal that brings up their beef that's off camera that no one knows about and doesn't affect the characters on screen, you would call them unprofessional. You would probably not hire them again. You would tell the rest of the industry probably to blacklist because of inappropriate practices, right? Well, why is it no different here, right? Yes, Charlotte Flair is to blame for this. But Tiffany Stratton comes in and she talks about someone's personal life. When let's just be honest, Charlotte Flair has never been divorced. Ashley Fleur, the woman playing Charlotte Flair, has been. And we have to be able to separate. We have to be able to separate the actor or actress from the character. You have to separate the two. The lines aren't blurred, and if they are, they shouldn't be. Right? Now, you could have personal beef and be professional and tell a story like Punk and Rollins and Punk and Drew. That's fine. Right? And make money for it. But this crosses a line where it's a little bit different. Here's the second reason. So the first reason that it crossed the line is that it doesn't add to the story. Now, if it added to the story, maybe we could have a different conversation. But nothing that was said on Friday added any intrigue to the story. We're not talking about the story. We're not talking about the Mania match. We're talking about two or three lines that get said that have nothing to do with the story. And we're talking about unprofessional performers. Like, guys, I love Tiffany Stratton. I think she's the future of the business. But part of me, if I'm Triple H, I'm teaching a lesson to everyone that's underneath me. You can't go off script. I'm having Tiffany Stratton lose the belt at WrestleMania. I am. I'm having Tiffany Stratton lose the belt at WrestleMania. Not because of we're trying to gain sympathy for Tiffany Stratton. No, not because of that. In fact, I have Tiffany lose the belt, and I keep her off TV for several weeks. And I have her lose a few more matches, right? In a similar way that Triple H or Hunter Hearst Helmsley was jobbed out because of the curtain call, I'm jobbing out Tiffany Stratton for this instance right here. You have to teach people and hold people accountable. You can't be unprofessional during an event. Your job is to tell a story. Tiffany Stratton didn't tell a story. She went to business for herself. That's AEW's job. That's what AEW's known for, not what WWE should do. Right? And so, yes, Tiffany Stratton crossed the line. Reason number one, she didn't tell a story. None of what she said on Friday told a story. So it was just her getting a receipt for what was said against her. Now, the second reason Tiffany Stratton crossed the line is because talking about someone's divorce, especially when we know some of the details of these divorces, is completely a low blow that doesn't need to happen. It's completely unprofessional. I don't know anything about Charlotte's first marriage or how she was treated in that, but it's been speculated. Some of the research that I've seen on it says that her first marriage, I don't even know the dude, it's Ricky something, right? That he wasn't the best, right? And mistreated her in some way, right? We do know Bram, her second Her second husband, Bram, physically assaulted her in some way, shape, or form, right? And we do know that Andrade allegedly was cheating on her. So I don't necessarily think, like so many people are like, well, Charlotte's 39 and has been divorced three times. She must be the common denominator. Well, that's not always true. That's not always true. And I'm not taking Charlotte. I don't have a side here. I think both of them were very immature and very unprofessional. But Ashley Fleur's divorces were not your standard divorce, right? She was mistreated in at least two of them, right? So I think bringing that up is a line that you shouldn't go into. You shouldn't bring someone's personal off-camera life onto the TV screen. You just can't do it. It's absolutely insane to do so. Absolutely insane to do that. It just is. I don't understand how anyone could find that acceptable to bring up that level of trauma and use it on screen, right? It's sort of the same way I felt like, as much as I didn't like Jeff Hardy, right? Doing Jeff Hardy when he was in WWE last, and they did that program with him and Sheamus, where they made fun of his alcoholism. It's one of those things where, like, you don't make jokes about those things. You don't use that for your own entertainment. That was just Vince ribbing Jeff Hardy, right? I think there are certain things that you just shouldn't do in professional wrestling. The key word being professional. What Tiffany Stratton did was not professional. Was Charlotte professional in this? Not at all. Because then Charlotte bites back. Charlotte bit the bullet. And she should have known not to do this because she's been in the business a while. But then she called, well, that's why Kaiser is in my DMs. Again, bringing personal life into the character work, because as far as we know in the character work, Ludwig Kaiser and Tiffany Stratton, the characters, have zero to do with each other. There's nothing that they don't interact. We've never seen them together on TV. And so they, right now, Jessica Wojnilko and Marcel Barthel, they're dating, but those are the actors that are playing Ludwig Kaiser and Tiffany Stratton. You see what I'm saying? So you have to be able to set, right? And you can't bring personal into the story when it doesn't fit. We're in the business of telling stories here. And so everything that happened Friday, it didn't tell a story. It didn't push anything. And maybe to some it got them hyped for them. I'm still not hyped for the match. The only reason I'm talking about this is because I do think I find it very immature, amateur AEW level type television. That's what this is. Right? So let me know what you guys think. You know, there is a comment. I don't go live often, so I don't typically read comments. Junkyard James here is in the comments. And he says CM Punk's pipe bombs didn't tell stories. Okay, I mean, sure, but I need y'all to understand, like, I wasn't out here praising. Was it a good promo? Sure. Was it necessarily the most professional thing to do? No. But I also think that the pipe bomb, like if you don't 100% believe that the pipe bombs were not scripted promos, that was CM Punk's gimmick. What's happening between Tiffany and Charlotte were not, this was not scripted. This was not part of the show. I 100% believe CM Punk pipe bomb promos were 100% in the plans to happen. That was his character. That was his gimmick. Right? But again, I also think it was under, like B-Master just said in the comments, it was under different management. Vince, let's just be honest. Vince wasn't the most professional person himself, right? I think Vince was always the dude that would tell the fart jokes in the comedy segments, right? And have that scripted in, right? So yes, it was under different management. But I also think Vince wrote these stories, and I 100% believe went up to Punk and said, "Hey, just get it off your chest, whatever you got to say." I if you don't believe that, that's fine. But I 100% believe that the pipe bombs were scripted television. Because if it wasn't, Vince was super strict with what would be said on his programming. He would cut the mic out if he didn't want CM Punk to say it, right? And so it was definitely within the storyline for the pipe bombs to happen. But let's move on to the main event of this glorious podcast being held this afternoon. The main event here, we're going to give a casual look at AEW Dynasty. A casual look at this Dynasty card. And again, I am going to watch it so that you guys don't have to. And I will have some things to say come next Friday about what we see here and with what happens next week on Dynasty or on Dynamite. We got, it looks like 12 matches, 10 on the main card, 2 on what they call Zero Hour or their pre-show. So there's a reason I didn't do this on Friday when I predicted the Owen. It was because I knew some shit would be made on Collision, and so I wanted to wait till Sunday to make my predictions. So let's talk about the Zero Hour pre-show matches first. And I hope Junkyard James, he's our AEW guy here at the Junkyard Media Group, I hope he's still in the live stream chat to listen to this. I know I sent the link to Cody as well, who's James's co-host, and I want to, you know, see what they got to say about all that. And so hopefully they're here. But let's talk about this Zero Hour pre-show now. So we have the first match, and I don't know the order, but it's going to be Action Andretti, Leo Rush, and Nick Wayne in a trios match against AR Fox and Top Flight. I'm going to be honest with you. Does anyone actually care about that? There's a reason this match is on Zero Hour. Nick Wayne and his and I guess the group is called Crew. excuse me. But yeah, they're going to win. Nick Wayne's going to win. They better win is what I'll say here. I don't have much to really say about it. I don't know the story going into it. All I know is that AR Fox loses pretty much any time he's on TV. And yeah, we'll go with, I'm just picking this because Nick Wayne should be, you know, if they really want him to be the future of the company, Nick Wayne should actually be picking up wins and not losses, right? So then your second and final Zero Hour match is an open challenge by Max Caster. So here's how this needs to go, right? This, again, is how We Too Deep books this open challenge. It has to be Anthony Bowens. Ever since the Acclaimed broke up, where the hell has Anthony Bowens been? Right, he was on TV for like 2 weeks while they were splitting up. Then he disappears. This is the only logical response that could happen here, is that you have Max Caster open up an open challenge that gets answered by Anthony Bowens, right? And Anthony Bowens better win the damn match. Anthony Bowens, guys, was the best of the group, right? This, what Max needs to lose, that's the gimmick, right? He claims to be the best wrestler alive because he has it trademarked, but then he loses all his matches. That has to be the gimmick here. And it could work. It's funny. It's hilarious, right? But if Max Caster faces Anthony Bowens and he wins, or if he wins the open challenge, and no matter who the opponent is, it's kind of lame because no one actually cares about Max Caster. They just don't, right? So that's 0 hour. So we'll get that out of the way. Next on the program, you have the Hurt Syndicate defending the World Tag Team Championships against Big Bill and Brian Keith. Oh boy, what a match this will be. I hope it's not as bad as the promo was a few weeks ago where the word bitch was used like 42 and a half times. So it's obvious where this is going, right? It's going to be the Hurt Syndicate winning this match, retaining the championships. Talking about the learning tree and his disciples, Chris Jericho is defending the ROH World Championship in a title versus mask match against Bandido. Well, this is obvious where this is going to go then. Bandido will become your ROH World Champion again, and Chris Jericho will find himself wishing he was back in the WWE. Like he apparently said on his podcast, he's willing to do again. we got that match taken care of. The next match, again, another match that, again, from the casual perspective, we're predicting from not much intrigue. The Death Riders, Pac, Yuta, and the wet paper bag known as Claudio. Guys, I didn't think you could get much worse than his character work and as Cesaro in WWE, but Claudio's even more boring than Cesaro was. I don't know how you get worse in terms of charisma, but Claudio has found a way to do so. Claudio is absolutely awful in terms of charisma. This tag, this trios, this whole group is awful. They're fighting rated FTR, though, which is just as awful. I know the story here is Dax is about to turn. Well, you don't have them win the trios titles if they're going to do a turn. So, again, just speaking from a logic perspective here, the Death Riders will retain their championships, and this will probably be the thing that fully sparks the turn of Dax Harwood, is them losing this match, right? So again, we'll have the Death Riders retaining that. Let's move on in. We have three matches from the Owen Hart tournament happening on a pay-per-view. Makes no sense to me why you would do a tournament and not have the tournament be on free TV. Makes zero sense to me, but what do I know about booking? So let's start with the women's. You have Mercedes Moné versus Julia Hart. And guys, I think this is obvious, right? I think this is the easiest of the three matches to predict from this tournament that's on this pay-per-view. Well, Mercedes Moné is winning this all day long. Mercedes Moné is winning this. If you think that Mercedes Moné, the great egotistic maniac that we have in Mercedes Moné, is going to allow herself to lose to Julia Hart, you're absolutely insane. You're absolutely insane. I know, so I didn't listen to the full, I'll be honest with you, I didn't listen to it, but I know Junkyard James, he did a prediction show with Cody yesterday, And I know James picked Julia and said it was going to be like a some sort of dirty finish, right? I think that idea is good to use. That's the only way you can. I think Mercedes would allow herself to lose, but I don't think it's this match. I think it's the next one, if not the finals, right? Because again, if the story we're telling is Athena versus Mercedes, if that's where we're headed at All In, right? Here's how you book this, right? Mercedes wins this match here against Julia. Athena beats, who's she fighting? Harley Cameron. So she beats Harley Cameron, which is obvious, right? So then you have Mercedes versus Athena in the semifinals. So you do one of two things. You either have Billy Starks get involved in that match and help Athena win, or the more logical thing, what I would do is to have Mercedes go to the finals, go into Double or Nothing, where she fights Thunder Rosa, and you have Athena attack Mercedes. And that's what sets up the feud to have that the match again at All In. That's where my headspace is at. That's where my headspace is at. So Mercedes Moné is going to the finals of this tournament, one way or the other. It's going to happen. And I do think she does get attacked by Athena in the finals against Thunder Rosa. We'll just put that there. We'll go to, oh boy, what a match. What a match this is. You know, I said the last one was easy to predict, but this one might be easier. Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe, who somehow always finds his way in the tournaments and on pay-per-views, even though he consistently loses matches and stumbles upon words and makes weird noises in his promos. Kyle Fletcher's winning. It's fucking obvious. Let's just move on. I'm fucking tired of seeing Mark Briscoe. I'm tired of this. Tony Khan has some sort of hard-on for him because he feels bad that Mark's brother died. But that was years ago. We have to move on. Can we stop putting this fucking guy on TV? He's awful. At everything he does, he's awful. Kyle Fletcher wins. So then we get the other match. Will Ospreay versus Kevin Knight. And again, if just like I said on Friday, if you've never watched AEW before and you're trying to figure out who the fuck Kevin Knight is, I don't have the answer for you. Why is he in the tournament quite literally 14 days? Quite literally 14 days, if not less than that, from signing the dotted line. Let me tell you what this is. I said it Friday. I'm going to say it again. Kevin Knight is in this tournament because Tony Khan thinks he's being petty. And the report came out that Kevin Knight had interest from WWE, and Kevin Knight chose AEW over WWE. So Kevin Knight's going to be pushed in a good way. He's going to get TV matches. He's going to get TV time. And it's going to be Tony Khan thinking he's doing something by getting the guy that chose AEW over WWE. But no one cares. No one cares. No one knows who Kevin Knight is. He shouldn't be in this tournament. I'll ask the same question I asked Friday. Where is MJF? Where is Bobby Lashley? Why is Christian Cage not in this match? Bro has another opportunity to get the title, and he's just not going to be in the tournament. I get Jay White is hurt, so I understand why he's not in it. Where's Powerhouse Hobbs? Where's Brian Cage? Where's Lance Archer? You couldn't find anyone other than the new guy to put in this tournament, especially someone like MJF, who said he wants the title again, but he wants Triple B around his waist again. but he's not going to go in the tournament to where he can get that opportunity. See, it makes zero fucking sense. It makes zero logical sense. Will Ospreay's winning this match. However, if Tony Khan is petty, if Tony Khan had some big balls and he wants to go through and do an upset here, because Will Ospreay's not going to the finals anyway, have Kevin Knight win this match. Go ahead and do it. I bet you won't. So now we go to the final four matches on the card, all of which are title matches. We start with the TNT Championship between Daniel Garcia and Adam Cole. Now, I don't know necessarily why these two are fighting. I know they had a promo on Collision, or right? They've been interacting. I don't really care jack shit about the TNT Championship. I'm just going to make a prediction and say that Adam Cole does indeed finally get a title again in AEW. If I'm reading the graphic correct, there is no time limit and no outside interference. Well, that's just fucking wonderful. I'm going to have to watch an hour-long match between these two, aren't I? Oh, fucking it. Lordy day. Adam Cole's winning. All right, let's move on. AEW International Championship three-way. Speedball Mike Bailey, Kenny Omega, Pretty Ricky. Kenny Omega's winning. I think that's obvious because you told us a long time ago that the end goal was Omega versus Okada at All In Texas. So rather than building that story, rather than building Omega versus Okada and building a story that lasts 3 to 4 months that can get me personally involved and interested in a feud to watch All In, you're going to just give me this dream match with Pretty Ricky, who's going to be the one to take the pin, and Kenny Omega is going to be the one doing the pinning, and Speedball Bailey, who's in a no-win situation here in his third match in the company, because no one really knows who you are. You already proved you suck on the mic, and now you're in a match where if you take the fall, it's your third match in the company. How do you recover from losing in your third match in the company? And so Ricochet has to be the one to take the pin here because Omega's not walking out without the championship. And instead of just doing what was logical and giving Kenny Omega a storyline with Okada that led to All In, you just do matches for the sake of matches. And sure, it's going to blow the house down. I'm sure people will jizz their pants. Dave Meltzer's already getting the lotion ready for this match. He's already written 7-star down next to the match rating. I'm sure everyone will be happy with this match. But in the end, it doesn't tell a story. AEW Women's World Championship, Toni Storm versus why the hell are you even in this company because you haven't given me any information about who you are, why you're with Penelope Ford or anything. Megan Bain. So if you don't know who Megan Bain is, don't worry. Nobody does because she hasn't told us what her purpose is, why she has a partnership with Penelope Ford, and why the fuck she's in a title match against your greatest ever women's world champion. So here's that. Part of me wants Megan Bain to win because I'm fucking tired of Toni Storm. I know there's a lot of AEW fans who think Toni Storm's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but her gimmick is cringy. She's cringy. The promos are cringy. Tony Khan must write everything horny when he writes Toni Storm shit because everything is over-sexualized, and I'm tired of seeing Toni Storm on my feed and on television. So can we please just put the belt on Megan Bain to make to make everyone happy and move forward. But they're not going to do that. Toni Storm is winning because you know the goal is going to be Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa and All In. So that's where we're headed. I just don't like Toni Storm. I just don't. I find her extremely cringy. But now we get to the match everyone's been waiting for. Jon Moxley and Swerve Strickland. In a match to figure out who bleeds first. No, I'm kidding. In a match that will definitely have blood. For the AEW World Championship. Here's all I got to say. Swerve better win. You can't walk out of Dynasty. You can't walk out of Dynasty with Jon Moxley holding this championship. You just can't. I don't think the AEW fans want it. The casual fans definitely don't want it. Because Jon Moxley literally is killing your viewership. He literally is killing your viewership. People don't like Jon Moxley. I don't even think it's the gimmick that they hate. I think it's just they don't like Jon Moxley. Send Moxley to do some hardcore shit somewhere else. I know I'm tired of seeing Jon Moxley. He's shown zero reason to still be champion. Swerve better walk out of Dynasty with that world championship. And I think he will. I think Tony Khan long-term knows. And here's how I know where they're headed. How Dynamite ended with the Swerve Strickland Hangman Page segment at the very end of the show. Now, the segment was awful, right? You had security guards coming literally out of nowhere. You had not much really be told in the promo. But you ended and you previewed what is going to be your main event or possibly your main event of All In. My problem with saying it's going to be the main event is that I think Tony Khan is scared to not make the women's matches the main event anymore because the last pay-per-view, Revolution, he didn't and he got shit on. And whether or not you believe Tony Khan reads Twitter or not, he does. And he overreacts. It's like I think Megan Bain and Toni Storm are main eventing tonight. When that shouldn't be the case. This is the pay-per-view where Swerve and Moxley should main event. But because Tony Khan doesn't actually understand the critique, he just hears the critique and then overreacts. Now he's going to make the women main event in a match where the women shouldn't main event because Tony Khan doesn't know how to book. And so Jon Moxley better lose this match. Swerve Strickland better win this match. My prediction is Swerve. I do think Hangman Page easily gets to the finals and wins at Double or Nothing. And we will have Swerve versus Hangman Page in Arlington, Texas at All In. So that's my AEW predictions. As a casual fan who casually keeps up with this company, let's just go through it one more time to end the show. I think Nick Wayne's little ragtag team over here are winning. I think Anthony Bowens is answering the open challenge and will beat Max Caster. If he doesn't, me and DJ Wavy D will personally drive to Philadelphia and riot. I know B-Master, you're close to Philly. Meet us there. No, I'm kidding. As for the main card, the Hurt Syndicate will win. Bandido will win. The Death Riders will win. Mercedes Moné will win. Kyle Fletcher wins. Will Ospreay wins. Danny Garcia will lose. And Adam Cole will win. Kenny Omega wins. Toni Storm wins. And Swerve Strickland will win. So that's this episode of the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. Thank you for everyone who tuned in live, and thank you to everyone who will watch after we have gone live. Tune in if you are going to watch Dynamite, Dynasty. They get what's up with the DYs and the event name. If you're going to tune into Dynasty, let me know what you guys think. Leave your predictions in the comment section. Don't forget to check the show notes and click on our affiliate links. Join the Discord, where there will be, I'm sure, some live discussion from James, Cody, and myself in the Discord page while we watch Dynasty. Going from there, thank y'all for watching. We will see you on Tuesday with me and DJ Wavy D right here on the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. Until then, y'all have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, Slapping Me Wrestling every Tuesday.